Viewer voice messages. All right, ladies and gentlemen, let's go ahead and get into this. Remember, the store, 20% off until the Atlanta Falcons game kickoff. So you have exactly a week from when I'm recording this. I'm recording this on Sunday morning, so a week left in the huge sale. All right, ladies and gentlemen, let's go ahead and get into the messages. Knock out as many of these as we can. First up is Mason Bruh.
All right, what's up, James?
What's up, man?
First of all, I know it might seem weird. I'm a 49er fan. I just found your channel after playing against you guys. I think it was week 2.
Oh, yeah.
Early. Yeah, I saw your video in my feed. And I've been watching ever since, so I'm keeping up with the Saints this year. And yeah, I enjoy your videos, so keep it up.
Thank you, man.
I guess this...
That's the power of the channel right there. Yeah, you watch, and then boom, all of a sudden, you're watching every single week. That's what it's all about. Thank you, Mason. I really appreciate that.
This is aimed towards all you guys, the whole fan base. And it's staying patient during a rebuild. Like, I know it's hard, and coming from a 49er fan, after losing that Super Bowl in 2013... And then maybe the year after we made the playoffs, that was a good run too. But ever since then, we were mid for a long time. Just like, you know, those 4-12, 3-13 seasons. And it feels hopeless. It really does. But you can't rush it. If you try and hold on to like your star players during a rebuild, then you're not fully rebuilding. And I think sometimes I see in your comments, a lot of people saying like, you got to go sign a superstar and you got to be careful with that. So, yeah, the patience during the rebuild is – it'll pay off, basically.
True.
Like, we went through Jim Harbaugh, Chip Kelly, Jim Tom Sula, and then after Kaepernick, we had Blaine Gabbert, a couple different quarterbacks. So, it's not immediate. You got to be patient. But once you get that solid team, like, we got our solid team in 2019, even through the injuries, losing players, you guys are going to go through that as well. But once you have that solid team with the solid coaching, you're really going to be a solid team for a while unless something crazy happens. So it's really just that patience. From an unbiased point of view, like I said, I'm not a diehard Saints fan, but you guys have the rebuild semi-figured out. I mean, it's only been a year or two since you guys were a decent team.
Yeah, and that is such a – that point, I see it so much, and it really is surprising, but well, I mean, I guess it's not, but like yesterday there was just a comment that said, you know, the last 3-4 years have been a disaster. You know, like someone's got to be held accountable for these last 4 years. And it's like 2 of those 4 years, we were 9-8, you know, I mean, and I'm not saying 9-8 should be celebrated, but the like holding someone accountable after Sean Payton leaves, Drew Brees leaves, and then in that, like, you're trying to figure things out, rebuild, whatever, you still have 2 9-8 seasons when things aren't perfect. I mean, I don't think anybody would agree the last 4 years have been, like, you know, the best product on the field or whatever, but it hasn't been the dumpster where it's like, all right, someone has to be held accountable for this travesty. This is despicable. You know, I mean, like, in 2021, Sean Payton was still coaching the team, you know? I mean, I saw someone say, we should have rebuilt in 2021. So Payton's not going to rebuild. Well, Sean Payton's looking at the roster, and he's like, these are the guys that I almost won a Super Bowl with. Sans Drew Brees. But Sean Payton's not rebuilding in 2021. You know, so there's a little bit of a, like, revisionist history kind of almost like a confusion, I guess, of how bad it's been mixed up with the timeline and all that. So... yeah, I mean, I agree with that.
Like 8-8, 9-8 type team.
Yeah.
So, like, it's only been a couple of years. So, you're quicker than us, quicker than a lot of rebuilds. Shuck looked really good against the Panthers a week or two ago. Yeah, I think it was just last week, actually. That was only, like, his second or third start. So,
second start.
Like, that looked really good, too. I mean, that's really it. Like, it's going to be dark and gloomy during your rebuild. But coming from someone unbiased, so it's not... just like an echo chamber of your comments from Saints fans that are either doomers, like it's over, or, you know, way too optimistic because they're a fan. From unbiased, you guys have a bright future, especially if Shutt keeps playing the way he is. I mean, there's been a lot of little miscues, maybe Olave dropped balls, fumbles.
Yeah.
Once that gets figured out and you guys really get through this rebuild, through this draft, you could be a solid team. So, hey, that's all I'm going to say. I'm not going to say you're going to beat us in the NFC Championship, but and I can't even call you the face of the franchise because I'm not part of the Saints franchise. I guess you're the face of the league. How about that?
I'll take that.
Thanks
That's
for
even
your
better.
Videos, bro.
Thank you, man.
Don't buy Saints jerseys for a while because you might be rebuilding.
That's true. Well said. Yeah, I wouldn't buy any jerseys for a second. Let's see how everyone plays out. Great call, Mason. And that audio was crisp. You should do a podcast. Yeah, I mean, you know, really, if you look at the last 5 years, like the car thing, we go 9-8 his first year. The second year, the team is trying to win. I mean, they were absolutely trying to win the NFC South. And why wouldn't they? They just tied for the NFC South the year before, right? So the thought was, well, you get Carmichael out of here, you get Kubiak in, offense will be better, we rock and roll. And then all the injuries happened. So last year, it's like, it's not a throwaway year, but it was more about the circumstances, more about the injuries and all that than just bad play. And then they blew it up, you know, so it's, seems like it's been a long time, but really it's been like, I'm not even sure he would classify last year. Last year sucked because of the injuries, but yeah, I mean, it certainly hasn't been as long as I think people are making it out to be. All right, next up is Cool Sports Rhymes Guy.
It's the Cool Sports Rhymes Guy once again. All of you need to subscribe to James Cremetta.
True.
It is time well spent because he is the podcaster with the greatest content.
There you go.
It is a Monday.
I was waiting because I was like, I don't think those rhymed, but then it rhymed at the end.
Monday morning, coming off of the win against the Carolina Panthers. And I'm happy about that win, especially after all of the smack that those Carolina Panthers fans were talking to us and about
they
us.
They certainly were.
Today, I wanted to talk about, I wonder what kind of things that our front office and our coaching staff looks at when it comes to the kind of players that we choose and the kind of players that we acquire, whether it be through the draft or through free agency. Like, I know obviously talent is high on the list and maybe even numero uno on the list, but I wonder what kind of a deeper dive they're taking to look at the intangibles and the other things that maybe stats can't measure.
Kellen puts a high priority on it. I mean, if one draft class tells us anything, but Kellen absolutely prioritized a lot of reps in college, team captains. If you were a team captain, that obviously was on his list. I think they also liked the prospects who went through the process, whether it was the combine or the Senior Bowl or pro days or whatever. The more you did as a prospect, the more they were about that. And so, yeah, they're big on the intangibles. They are big on high character guys and guys with a ton of reps, team captains, stuff like that. So going forward, you can kind of cross off some players who don't check those boxes, and you can kind of add players who do check those boxes. They also seem to prioritize, you know, Power Five kind of schools. They wanted players who got a lot of reps, meaningful reps, you know, whether that was at Texas or wherever else. They want guys who, I guess, have proven they can do it, and it doesn't look like they are big on the, you know, let's go try and find the guy from Illinois State. They would much rather say, let's go look at Georgia or Alabama or whatever and start there. And then, of course, there's system stuff. Of course, then you have who can play in the system, and that's both for Brandon Staley and Kellen Moore.
Like, I know some things are kind of hard to measure, but I think if a deeper dive is taking a look, or they look harder into the other things, I think some things can be seen and some things can be discovered about some players. Like, for example, the kind of work ethic a player might have, or maybe their mentality when it comes to winning and losing.
Yeah.
And also, like, how they respond when something bad might happen on the field. Like, what is their attitude, how they respond?
Yeah, Kellen's talked about that, too. He's talked about adversity with players on the roster and draft picks. So he's talked about how, you know, if someone messes up, he wants them to have the opportunity to bounce back, and he wants to see how they bounce back. You talked about that with Rattler and Shuck, where when they throw a pick or whatever, he's excited for that next drive because he wants to see how they respond.
Like, are they paying attention to how a player might be on the sideline?
Yeah, for sure.
When something happens, but
yeah.
Like, for example, when it comes to our team, our Saints, I think we have talented players.
Yeah.
But I kind of question some of the intangibles of the of those some of the talented players that we have? Like what is their work ethic? Like, do they, just because they have talent, like, are they just relying on that and that alone? Like, do they put in extra work?
This is a very tricky thing, all right? Because if, like, this is how I look at the whole intangible thing. The only time you should be questioning the intangibles of a player is right when they enter the league, okay? Because it's very different from college and the NFL. It's very different how it's structured, very different how you have to approach it. And then if they sign a huge contract, then you want to look at, okay, have they fallen off? Has this happened? Whatever. Beyond that, especially veterans, you got to kind of just chalk it up that they have the intangibles. You don't get to the league. You don't get to your second, third contract. You don't get to 10 years in the league or 8 years in the league or whatever without having a good work ethic. And a lot of that stuff is just kind of baked in. Doesn't fluctuate. Doesn't, you know, these guys, these are the 1% of the 1%. So I don't, after a certain point, I just kind of chalk all that up, and I don't really focus on the intangibles. Once they've kind of proven it one way or the other at the very beginning.
What is their attitude when it comes to winning and losing? Like, how do they respond under pressure? Are they the type of player that might not want to step up in pressure situations or be afraid to step up in pressure situations?
Yeah, like that kind of stuff. Like, you don't get to the league in that spot. You know, like, and if you do, if you somehow do get to the league and you don't like pressure or whatever and somehow you just squeak through the cracks, then it'll get found out pretty quick.
But like, take Juwan Johnson, for example. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe it was the Patriots game when he fumbled the ball, and then after he fumbled the ball, he was laughing it up with some of the Patriots players. I'm not saying that players should act like it's the end of the world when something bad happens, but it's just the game at the end of the day. But why are you laughing it up? Like, to me, I wouldn't be laughing it up with the opposition after I just fumbled the ball and possibly cost my team a chance to win the game, come back and win that game. So that's just one thing. And then, like, take Jared Cook, for example, a few years ago in the Buccaneers game, when he fumbled that ball coming out of halftime, we were driving against the Bucs. He fumbled that ball. Like, to me, I didn't see him laughing with the opposition like Juwan Johnson, but he just looked like he was kind of shell-shocked on the sidelines. Like, he was just kind of out of it. You know what I'm saying? Like he might have been afraid to step up. Almost like he would have been like he didn't want Breeze to throw it to him again. You know what I'm saying? Like, and sure enough, at the end of that game, I think Breeze threw him a pass and it hit off of his hands and it bounced up and it was intercepted at the end of the game, and that cost us a chance to come back and win the game. But like, when it comes to things like that, like, to me, a tight end like George Kittle, if he fumbled the ball, I don't think he would be laughing it up with the opposition. And to me, he wouldn't be on the sideline looking like he was shell-shocked. Like, to me, he would be fired up. Like, he would want to come back in and avenge that mistake and want to make a play. Because if you remember against the 49ers years back in one of those games where he stiffed on Chauncey Gardner-Johnson and made a big play, and we ended up losing that game partly because of that play that he made. But then also, Blake Groupie, I'm kind of nervous about Blake Groupie. Like, I don't think he has that ice cold water in his veins like a Garrett Hartley did when he kicked for us. Garrett Hartley wasn't the best kicker we had, but to me, he was good under pressure. He stepped up when we needed him to. Like, of course, he made that field goal to send us to the Super Bowl and then against the Vikings. Then he also made all of his kicks in the Super Bowl against the Colts. Like, I feel like if Blake Groupie was in that situation where he had to kick a field goal to put us in a Super Bowl, like, I kind of feel like he might choke. I think that's why he can go almost perfect in preseason, but then when it comes to the regular season, he misses kicks when the kicks actually count and the game is on the line. But anyway, always enjoy listening to the show, of course. Keep up the good work.
Much appreciated. Yeah, I mean, it's hard. Like, it's hard to – I mean, those are, like, unquantifiable things. You just never know – you just never know the situation. You know, like, is a drop because of the receiver? Is it because of the defender? Is it because of intangibles? Is it because of the moment? Is it like, there's so much happening. I just very rarely go to the unquantifiable where it's like, oh yeah, he dropped that because he doesn't have that dog in him. You know, it's like, what does that even mean? It's like, oh, he missed the kick because he doesn't have ice water in his veins. Again, what does that even mean? Did he just miss the kick because of the angle of his leg? Did he miss it because of his execution or the technique? Like, to me, that makes more sense, right? Like, it makes more sense that he missed it because of some flaw in the actual execution versus the level of ice water in it, you know, flowing through his veins. So, but there is an element. I mean, there definitely is an element of pressure. There is an element of things get harder in pressure situations. I mean, no doubt about it. So, it's, you know, like, I don't think you can draft players because of their clutch gene or whatever. Like, it's not, you know, it's not that easy. But yeah, I mean, it's definitely an interesting thing. It's, I mean, sports psychology is a real thing for sure. All right, next up is Jay.
What's up, James? I just wanted to send a quick message. I had a little thought in my head about the fan base. Yeah. Honestly, it's not even about the team, but it's about Justin Fields. I know you just posted the $40 million Justin Fields post on Twitter. And, you know, even during this season, people were still telling us before the deadline to go trade for Justin Fields, even after seeing his performance. You feel what I'm saying? So I come to the conclusion that majority of our fan base doesn't know ball. And not only that, majority of our fan base, I think, came and became a fan when the era of the Saints was like greatness. You know what I'm saying? I think that's when a lot of them joined. They joined because we were good. You feel what I'm saying? So now that we're not good, they don't know what to do because they don't really know.
I don't, he was getting fired up. I didn't cut him off. That was his own. That was the call. That was just, that was it. But I think what I've talked about this before, but I think what happens is if you only watch one team or one league, then you're not seeing what all is happening. Justin Fields has been in the NFL for 5 years. You know, like, this is not, he's not a rookie. He's not a second year guy. And I mean, that's a big sample size. You know, it's not hard to watch 5 years of Justin Fields and be like, all right, this guy's horrible. It's the same thing with Penix, same thing with Bryce Young, same thing with Trevor Lawrence. Like I say all the time, Trevor Lawrence is not good. He cannot play. And then year in and year out, he doesn't play, the Jags aren't good, whatever. And people are surprised when Trevor Lawrence isn't good. You know, I mean, again, Bryce Young has given us plenty of sample size. You know what he can do. You know what he can't do. It is what it is at this point. All right. So, and I, like on Thursday nights, if you watch Thursday Night Football, Justin Fields is a great example. This Thursday night, the Jets played, and Kirk Herbstreit on the broadcast was like, you know, Justin Fields has kind of struggled a little bit in the NFL, but it's not because he doesn't have physical talent. I mean, when he was at Ohio State, blah, 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 blah. And then he went on about the Ohio State stuff. And to me, it's obvious that Kirk Herbstreit, the majority of him watching Justin Fields was in college because Kirk Herbstreit's a college analyst. So he for sure is watching more college football than the NFL. So in his mind, he's still, even if it's just like 70% or 65% or whatever, in his mind, he's thinking of that player at Ohio State. And he's not thinking about the last 5 years or whatever with Justin Fields. So yeah, that's why, I mean, I know everyone isn't watching every team or every game, but it does help if you do watch as much as possible, because if you don't, like the Fields thing before the season, everyone was saying we should trade for Justin Fields and go get Justin Fields or whatever. And a majority of that is because they remember him at Ohio State. They remember him being a top draft pick. And as crazy as it sounds, they kind of equate him like with Madden. And it's like, oh, well, he's fast and he's got a good arm and whatever. It's like, okay, but he can't play quarterback, right? And I always make the meme, but anytime you see blank player released from team, if it is a known name, the next week, every other Saints channel's like, should the Saints sign Odell Beckham Jr.? Should the Saints sign blank player Asante Samuel? Should the Saints sign blah blah blah, like just random names, random players. And some of these players are like, guys, he hadn't played 2 years. You know, like, why would, what's going on here? You know, so there is something to that. There is something to like a big name or whatever. Just, oh, I know who that person is. Oh, I know who that coach is. There is something to that too. But, you know, I mean, not everyone watches every single game. So it is what it is. But yeah, I mean, analysts do that a lot. I mean, Mel Kiper, famously, when Justin Fields was about to get, when he was at the end of his tenure with the Bears, he was saying that Justin Fields would be traded for a first-round pick. And say, Mel, brother, that's not even close. I think he ended up getting traded for like a sixth. So it just shows you a lot. I'm telling you, man, a lot of these analysts, they're straight up guessing. All right, next up, Derek Grimillion.
James, brother, how we doing today?
What's up, man? How's it going?
This is Derek from Baton Rouge.
There you go.
Tuning in with the face of the franchise, man. Love
the best
work
in the world. Yeah.
I'm going to be quick today, though. I was just happening this Tuesday after the Carolina game. You know, we all watched it. I watched your videos yesterday.
Breaking down
some assessment. And, man, I'm hyped to see Tyler Shuck looking this good. Hopefully, you know, it wasn't just a flash in the pan. I know it's just one game. But, you know, hoping for the best for him moving forward. I was a big Rattler believer. But now that Shuck's the guy. So,
yep, there you go. True.
Basically, my question, though, is, you know, let's just take out quarterback from the draft moving forward. If we end up with a top three or top five pick next year, like, what should be our biggest priority? It seems like defensive end is definitely a big necessity. But, you know, now with O-line being the way it is, I know we got to keep looking there again. Like, wide receiver, obviously. I don't know. I'm kind of just curious, like, if, you know, if you were GM, what is your draft strategy going into next year if, say, we have pick either three or pick, like, five, somewhere in that little realm? Yeah. Thanks, man.
Thank you. If it was up to me, I'm always taking the best player. I'm always taking who I think can make the most impact at whatever position. Now, obviously, if I don't need the position, I'm not going to do it. But, I mean, like, I would look at Arvell Reese first. You could even look at players like Caleb Downs. Carnell Tate just got hurt. He has a calf injury, so he's out for the year. So, I'm sure he'll be fine by the draft. But something to look at. Jeremiah Love for Notre Dame, the running back, has been popping off. If you have top five picks, probably too high for that. But you just take the best player and you start stacking players. You're never going to have a problem if you just have too many good players, too many all pros, right? Like, so that's how I would look at it. I wouldn't take certain positions that high up because I think their positional impact is low, like cornerback, guard, center, things like that. We don't need a center, but things like that. Like the impact isn't there for a top five pick. If Brock Bowers or somebody was in the draft, I would love to take the next Tyler Warren or the next Brock Bowers, but I don't think there's a tight end that's that good, certainly not that level this year. So, but that's how I would do it. I would just look at who I think can be an all-pro, you know, who I think is the best player on the board. But right now, to give you a name, right now it would be Arvell Reese would be my top guy. If I could make up a prospect, like what we really need is – obviously anyone would use this, but like an Aaron Donald / super Jalen Carter disruptor in the middle of the defensive line. I think if that was in the draft, that'd be the home run. That would be got to have it, got to take it if that player was out there. So, but we'll see. I mean, there's a lot of college football to be played. There's a lot of, you know, we'll see draft stock rise and fall with a lot of players, and certainly as the draft gets closer. But that's kind of how I would approach it. All right, next up is... who dat, Matt?
Yo, Mr. Scrimetta.
What's up, man?
Scrimetta 4. It's good to be in the Scrimettaverse. It's Matt. Yeah.
Nice blinker usage.
Wanted to call and take a victory lap and say I called in last Thursday and said Saints by a million. Alvin
you were close.
Going to have a good game.
Yeah, you were close.
And, you know, stop drooling. All of your keyboard.
Yeah.
Panthers suck. This is going to be a good day.
All true.
Go out, have a frozen Irish coffee.
There you go.
From Aaron Rose.
Yeah.
In the French Quarter, go have yourself a Bavardier. Go to the French 75 restaurant. Have some crab claws. And
what a day. Hey, babe. Jesus. I mean, what a day, just knocking down crab claws, frozen Irish coffees, French 75s. I mean, geez.
I love it. Something I was thinking about while I was absolutely maxing out deadlifts at the gym the other day listening to you.
God, there's nothing I love more than just getting crazy with deadlifts, just borderline injuring yourself for absolutely no reason. Love that, man. I mean, that's just what I'm all about.
And it's kind of a random thought, but, you know, there's all been all this talk about Tyler Shuck being 26 years old and
yeah,
he's an ancient, you know, I mean, he roamed the earth before the dinosaurs. And
yeah, he was with the dinosaurs.
Whatever. Yeah. But I was just kind of curious, and I looked up. I was thinking, how old was Drew when he came to New Orleans? And he was 27 years old. And I don't think there's one Saints fan that would have even thought about, you know, his age and that he's past his prime and he's coming in to New Orleans so late in his career. And I don't think anybody would complain about the time we had with Drew. You know, that's the best era of Saints football, and it came out of a 27-year-old quarterback coming to New Orleans. Also, just want to say I hate the whole like groupthink mentality about the front office. And
let me go to the Drew point real quick. So obviously a different situation. You got an established guy who's pseudo known quantity. The medical was a huge variable, but like, even if Drew is, in my opinion, the second best quarterback to ever play. So that's a tough like comparison. I know you're not comparing Drew and Tyler Shuck, but just like to look at both of the situations. But even if he doesn't play 10 years, even if he just plays four, let's just say he plays 4 years. Okay. I'm kind of cool with that. He was a 40th overall pick. You know, he, Andrew Luck only played what, 8 years. So I don't get too bogged down in this idea of like, well, you know, what if he'll in 10 years, he'll be 36. Like, well, blah, blah, blah. It's like, just give me 4 years. Give me two. Give me three. Give me somewhere in between, you know, 1 to 5 good years. And I'm fine with that. I'll figure the rest out. So I think there's a little bit too much of putting the cart before the chickens or whatever. But yeah, I mean, just give me couple seasons and we'll be all right. So, and that's kind of what he's here for. The whole purpose of the Tyler Shuck pick was, let's get a mature guy who has a little bit of a shorter developmental track, get in here, get up to speed pretty quick, and then give us a couple of good years. You know, so he wasn't a first overall pick. If the 40th overall pick plays at a high level for 4 years, I'm totally fine with that.
Everybody that says to me, you got to get rid of Mickey, Mickey's the problem, blah, 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 they can never back it up with any real sort of data, you know? And I think it's just like they don't – people like a heel, and there's so much theater involved in football anyways, yeah. And that's the bullshit that annoys me about it, honestly. But story, it's such a narrative-driven sport. Anyways, just want to say I appreciate all the videos you've done on that, because it's something I've never really jived with, is like, just get rid of Mickey in the front office when they've done so much good. Kai Harley's done so much good for this franchise and really brought us back into relevance, or brought us into relevance in the first place. Anyways, love the show as always. You're the best in the biz. The face of the franchise. Who dat? We dat.
Who dat?
I'm out.
Thank you, man. Great call. Yeah, I mean, the Mickey Loomis thing, look. There is a... And I'm such in the minority on this, all right? And I think a lot of it is driven by content creators that just kind of have that fastball of anti-Mickey Loomis. And it makes for, in some audiences, entertaining content, and they like it and whatever. And there is, like you said, kind of a heel element to where you do have to create your boogeyman or your heel or whatever that you can place the blame on when things go bad. And it's funny because whenever I do those videos, in the comments, it's always like, you know, gum smacking Mick or Mickey, you know, some nickname or whatever, or talking about like Gail and Mickey. It's always like the most just like, you know, it's the most like simple, shallow, like narrative. and there's nothing really behind it. And it's just kind of, and I'm not saying Mickey is great. I'm not saying like he doesn't deserve to, he doesn't deserve like some pushback for sure. He absolutely does. And when he does wrong or makes a bad move or whatever, we talk about it, no problem. But yeah, I mean, it's just like, it's just kind of like one of the, you know, like those like the toys or whatever, where like you pull the string and it makes like the animal noise. Like that's kind of what I think of that narrative. It's just like, okay, you pull the string, gum smacking Mick, or you pull the string and then some other thing, some other sound drop, or you pull the thing, look past the results, or you pull the thing and, you know, like it, just whatever. And it's just kind of like just noise, you know, it's just kind of noise and that's just it. And yeah, you know, I had a comment yesterday that was like talking about the Mickey Loomis thing, and they were like, you know, Mickey has to answer for the Marcus Davenport pick. And my response was, do you think Mickey made that pick? Like, who do you think was the loudest voice in the room to draft Marcus Davenport? Who do you think is actually making that pick? And they're like, Mickey. And I was like, okay. If that's what you think is happening, then I can tell you it's not. I can tell you that Mickey Loomis is not overriding at that point, you know, Sean Payton or Dennis Allen or whoever, and saying, no, 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 no. You know, I've been watching a lot of Marcus Davenport tape. You know, like, because if that's the situation, then is Mickey also drafting Trey Hendrickson and Zach Bond? Is he drafting Alvin Kamara, Michael Thomas, or is, like, what's actually happening? So I think there's just a kind of a misunderstanding of how that kind of stuff works. And, you know, it is what it is. I mean, I don't sweat it one way or the other, but you know, here we just try. It's just way more of like, okay, how can we actually break this down, quantify this? What are we actually talking about? What's actually happening? You know. So, and again, guys, I'm not fully defending Mickey Loomis nonstop. I'm not fully defending anything. I'm just saying some of this stuff absolutely does. You know, some of these moves or whatever absolutely deserve like criticism. We just got to make sure the criticism is going at the right person. All right. Okay. Here we go, ladies and gentlemen. The next up is M. Just straight up M. James Bond. I believe the head of the operation was named M, right?
Hey, James. First off, just wanted to say I am, you know, huge supporter of the channel.
I appreciate
love what
that.
You do. I
Thank
love
you.
The analytical breakdowns that you do. I would say you are the most accurate sports analyst there is right now, not
That's
even
true.
Just for the New Orleans Saints. Yeah. I believe if you wanted to divert into, you know, other teams, which you often do, you know, whenever there's breaking news, you divert into other teams, and you do a very good job at that. And
you're
one of my favorite content creators or YouTubers, whatever you want to say, to watch slash listen to, you know, face of the franchise. It's a, you know, a title that was earned, I would say.
100%.
So, anyway, I digress. I wanted to get your opinion on the current coaching situation in New Orleans. You know, you've talked about your opinion on it a lot, but I want to compare Kellen Moore to other rookie coaches and their situation, and I just want your breakdown on it, and if there's something I'm missing. You know, I want to get educated, so I'm coming to... I'm coming to someone more educated in this field so I can get some knowledge, Jeremy.
Came to the right place, yeah.
Peep this, right? I was high on Kellen Moore coming in. I'm still a little high after this game. You know, he brought that back, but he was certainly in my hot seat. I know it's only been a few games, you know, half a season with a quarterback that you didn't draft yet that you had. So I know it's a... You know, it's a very unique situation, you could say.
Yeah, true.
Not everybody in the NFL currently is dealt the hand that Kellen Moore has been dealt. But as a Saints fan, going from Dennis Allen to a very young offensive coordinator who is becoming the Saints head coach, I was high on it. I was super excited. It's a whole new movement. I remember Cam Jordan after the Panthers game last year was saying he was going to retire.
Yeah, he was pissed.
He made a phone call planning to retire. The next day, his coach was gone. He said that was the worst coach that he ever worked with. I forgot his name.
Grantham.
My apologies, but you know, you could use that as a trivia now. But anyway, I want to get into the current coaching situation.
Okay.
The current other rookies that are, you know, in the NFL right now are Ben Johnson, Brian with...
Yeah, Ben Johnson, Aaron Glenn, Liam Cohen.
The Dallas Cowboys, Liam with Jacksonville, yep. Kellen Moore, of course.
Yeah, Brian Schottenheimer is the Dallas coach.
And Aaron Glenn, LOL.
Yeah.
The Cowboys are 3-5. Mm-hmm. All right. The Bears are 6-3. Ben Johnson Bears are 6-3.
Yeah.
With Caleb Williams, which is shocking to me. It blows my mind. You know, of course we know Saints are 2-8 and Jets are 2-7, LOL. I wouldn't expect nothing less.
Yeah.
And the Jags are 5-4, and that's the one that gets me, and I don't understand how this has changed, how they changed around so quick. So aside from the, you know, obvious rebuild that's going on, what would you say, you know, why are the Saints 2-8 aside from the rebuild? Why aren't we, you know, 5-4 with a rookie coach? You know, Jacksonville Jaguars, you know, watching you, we've clowned Trevor Lawrence for a minute, you know. What do you call it? What's another one? The Bears. I would say, honestly, I would say our roster is equivalent with the Bears in Jacksonville. I wouldn't say our roster is much worse. If it is worse, it's not by a lot. You know, controversial but brave take. I don't think that the Saints roster is that bad on paper. You know, Chris Olave, you had Rashid Shaheed, Alvin Kamara, DeMario Davis, Cam Jordan. You have some great rookies, Danny Stutzman, Devin Neal. I mean, Tyler Shuck put on a hell of a game, you know, against the Panthers. We it looks like we have a good team on paper. But I just want you to, if you can, please explain why the Jacksonville Jaguars are 5-4, the Bears are 6-3, and we are 2-8. I just want to know if there's something I'm missing, or, you know, if just simply it's just a rebuild. And if that's the case, so be it. But if I'm going to hear it from somebody, I want to hear it from you, man. Thank you for your time. And, man, have a great rest of your day. You know, I'm not in Louisiana right now. Please enjoy some of the food with me. I'll be back shortly. All right,
there
man.
You go.
Take care.
Great call. Thank you very much for calling. I appreciate that. All right, let's take this question a couple different ways. So first, let's look at the coaches. So Kellen absolutely has the hardest job of the coaches, right? He inherited the worst situation. Don't forget, when he took the job, Derek Carr was the starting quarterback. Now, was he ever going to actually play? I don't know. But Kellen takes the job with Derek Carr as your starter. Carr retires, so he has to deal with all that stuff like 2 weeks in. Go into the draft. He's got to figure out, you know, they draft Tyler Shuck, but then they play Spencer Rattler. So Kellen's situation is way different than all the other ones. I mean, Jacksonville, that roster has been there. You know, like that is that's just their core. Like their core, you know, they enter with Trevor Lawrence, Brian Thomas, Etienne, like some of these guys who have been sitting there, Trayvon Walker. Dallas, same thing. Like Dallas is a pretty established team, pretty established roster. I mean, they have a veteran quarterback. They have CeeDee Lamb. I'm not saying these are good rosters, but they're kind of set. You know, they are what they are. I mean, even Chicago was set to a certain extent. So Kellen inherited a difficult job. And if you remember at the beginning of the season, it was very like exploratory. It was very, okay, let's go with Spencer Rattler is starting quarterback. Okay, let's go with Alvin and Kendra Miller. Okay, let's go with this defensive rotation. Okay, let's go with this. And there was a lot of finding out. You know, like we were bad on third down. We had penalties early on. I mean, the Saints, I saw on their Instagram, posted how there's like 7 rookies who are making huge impacts this year. You know, there's just been a lot of moving and shaking. I mean, even the team right now, the team that played the Panthers, very different team than the team that was playing earlier in the season, right? So, and that has been different than all the other teams as well. All the other teams are kind of like, all right, we know at least what we have rotation-wise or whatever. Let's just try and maximize the output. The Saints, they didn't even really know the rotations. They didn't even really know what any of this was. You know, they didn't know, okay, who even is going to be on the field. Then they got to put in a new offense, put in a new defense. So the Saints were a little different than those situations as far as like what Kellen Moore was inheriting. And Kellen Moore also, not only is he figuring all that stuff out, but he's figuring all out while everything is new. You know, like with the defense, with the offense, with the play calling, with the roster, with the quarterback, with everything. So it's complete top-down newness. Okay, now let's look at the Jags and the Bears specifically of why they have more wins than I think you would think. And here you go. Like, this is a simple way of doing it, but it is kind of true. The Bears have the highest turnover differential in the NFL. The Jaguars are tied for second. That's it. You know, like, the Bears, there was like four or five games there where they were plus three in the turnover battle in a row. That's just going to give you wins. That's going to give you wins that you probably shouldn't have won. You know, so that's a huge reason. I mean, the Saints were minus three in the turnover battle. That's a 17 turnover difference. You know, so this is a big reason why. I mean, they played nine games. They're plus 14. That's crazy. Right, I mean, let's look at some of these box scores. Like, I remember this one. This is the Jaguars-Chiefs, right? The Jaguars beat the Chiefs at home. This is a great win, right? Like, this is one of those games where it's like, damn, this was a great win by the Jaguars. The Jaguars are back. And then you look at the box score, and the Chiefs had 7.6 yards per play, 476 yards of offense to 319. They had 26 first downs. They had more time in possession. They won the turnover battle, and they lost the game. You know, like, this is one of those anomalies where it's almost unexplainable. This is one of the craziest box scores you'll ever see. Chiefs win first downs, total yards, YPP, passing, rushing, turnover margin, and time of possession, but lose the game. Nuts, right? Like, so this is one of those wins where it's like, man, this is a great win by Jacksonville. But then you look at this and you're like, how the hell do they win this game? You know, how did they do this? Let's look at the Bears. The Bears had quite a few of these. The Patriots, or let's see, no, it wasn't the Patriots. It was the, let's look at the Raiders. I know the Raiders was a crazy one. So the Raiders, okay, exact same thing. So they win at Las Vegas. Now, Vegas is terrible. The Bears win by one. And if you look at the game, right, the Bears had less first downs. The Bears had less yards. The Bears had 2.7 yards per play different. The Raiders had 6.9, cheeky, yards per play to the Bears 4.2. Okay? The Raiders had 240 yards rushing to the Bears 69. Again, cheeky. Okay? The Bears had 2.7 yards a rush. The Raiders had 7.7 yards a rush. So how the hell did the Bears win this game? I mean, they got dominated by the Raiders, who are terrible. They gave up 7 yards of play. How? Right here. Four turnovers. Right there. Four turnovers to one. And that was it. And the Raiders also missed a field goal at the end of the, or got blocked or whatever to lose this game. So this is why you kind of have to dig into some of this stuff. You kind of have to dig into these numbers and you dig into some of this to see. Because, again, not all wins are created the same. You know, they're not. I mean, this game right here, the Commanders game, this is the one where Jaden Daniels fumbles at the end of the game to lose it. Look, lo and behold, right? Plus three in the turnover margin. Bears have no turnovers. Washington has three turnovers, including the fumble by Jaden Daniels. So it's stuff like that where, yeah, weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks later, this is just a win. You know, but you got to remind yourself what actually happened. So some of this is... some of this explains why they have more wins than you would think. All right, next up, Divine Eternity.
What's good, face of the franchise?
What's up, man?
Divine again. So we're at the bye week now. I mean, I'm recording this on Thursday, so we got Thursday night football tonight, Patriots yep. and Jets. And then you got the roll around to the Sunday games where, you know, we won't be playing. We get to take a breather or whatever. And I just want to discuss, like, the Saints' remaining schedule. We knew going sure. into the season that the back end of the schedule was going to be, like, super easy.
Very manageable, yeah.
As far as who's the competition, I think the toughest opponent we have left is literally just the Bucks. Other than that, we just yeah. got division opponents, Panthers, like the Falcons, Carolina yeah, Panthers,
Titans,
we got
Jets,
Dolphins, Jets, Titans. Yeah. A lot of winnable games are left. Yeah. And I was wondering, do you think Kellen Moore can still win himself into that Coach of the Year reward?
No.
I know you talked about how wins and losses isn't that important, and I agree with you 100%. This is a evaluation sort of year. And, of course, Saints fans, we're on cloud 10 right now, riding that win we just got in Carolina. And I want to talk about that, too. So, going into the season,
Kellen would have had to get to 9 or 10 wins to win Coach of the Year. If he got to 10 wins, I think he could have won it. But, yeah, he can't win it now.
Of course, I remember you did your schedule prediction, and your original prediction was 6-11.
Yeah.
And I saw that recently when you was asked about it, where you are now, and you changed it to 4-13. But that was before the Carolina Panther game. And
yeah,
we just beat Carolina in Carolina. And that kind of changed my view on things to where I had us splitting with Carolina.
Yeah, same. It does change it. I mean, granted, I didn't have a starting 1-8 or whatever, so it's not perfect math, but if you were to ask me now, I would definitely add a win because I think that's like a stolen win. So I would say I would be comfortable with 5 wins now.
Even though, you know, we don't think much of them or Bryce Young, I still had a splitting with them.
Yeah,
but now that we got the win in Carolina, I think it is possible for us to win in New Orleans.
Oh yeah.
And sweep Carolina. And that's just me personally. Now, not gonna lie, I can't remember what video it was, but I did leave a comment clowning Carolina, saying that Kellen Moore was going to sweep them anyway. But I mean, shoot, it looked like it's possible now after we just beat them in their own stadium, and now they got to come to our world. And
I mean, we have 2 wins, right? Let's say we beat Carolina and New Orleans, beat Atlanta and New Orleans. You're at 4 wins. So then if you just get some combination of wins out of Tennessee, the Jets, the Titans, the Dolphins, like 6 wins is not that crazy. 5 wins, not that crazy, right? Like when you're talking about such a small number of wins, yeah, I mean, I would not be mind blown if we ended up with 6 wins or somewhere in there. Yeah, I mean, it would be, you know, that'd be a hell of a turnaround, but the teams we play are just so bad. And especially the divisional teams are weak right now. Like Atlanta is way worse than people thought. And we play them at home, you know, off in their weird situational spot with the whole coming back from Germany and all that stuff. So, yeah, I mean, you just kind of find a couple of wins here and there, and all of a sudden, you're a 4, 5, 6 win team.
Try to beat us in a dome. And, you know, man, it's just looking real up right now.
Yeah.
There's no telling what's going to happen. You know, don't get too high. Don't get too low.
Yeah.
Just kind of stay in the middle. But I think it's possible for us to really put together some wins if we keep seeing Tyler Shuck play as good as he is and watch these rookies just kind of soar into their, you know, their possible future forms for the.
Well, yeah, I mean, and we talked about that before, too, where it's like, look, this could be similar to 2016-ish, where it takes a minute, but then the draft class kind of finds itself, and we figure out who the impactful players are, and they get more reps or whatever, and then maybe they do kind of take this team to that next level. And it kind of is coming to fruition, where now we're starting to see, you know, Riley and Sanker and Shuck and Stutzman and Banks and all these guys where they're kind of coming into their own, and they're kind of starting to take a little bit more of the weight off the shoulders of some of our veteran guys. Where, you know, early in the season, our vets really were not good. The guys who we were leaning on were just terrible. So if they can kind of refine their form and these rookies step up, yeah, that's a totally different team than early in the season.
Future, and just seeing, like, this team really come together. At this point, it's been 10 games, and Kellen Moore is a rookie head coach, but we knew that he was trying to figure some things out as well as trying to help these rookies develop. So it's been a up and down seesaw, but
yeah,
man, it's we're in a good spot, man.
And I think so.
I think your original prediction, the 6-11, I think that is highly possible. When I went through the schedule, the rest of the schedule, when I looked, I kind of numbered it out to 6-11, possibly, you know, maybe 5-12. I would love for Kellen Moore to get six wins on the season. That would look good because he would then win more games than we did last year. I would love to see that happen. I would love to see him get that, you know.
I mean, that would be such a good coaching job. If we started off so bad and he's just putting the pieces of the puzzle together in different ways and then finally finds the one that fits and the Saints rattle off a bunch of wins and they're all of a sudden they're 6-11. And man, what a job.
That rookie head coach reward. And yeah, man, what are your thoughts? I hope I'm not just riding this.
I think it's definitely possible.
We just won wave and let's just be happy. You know, I understand football is football. I get how things work in a rebuild, but
yeah,
man, this schedule, it don't get no easier than this, man.
Yeah.
But that's all I got.
And, absolutely possible.
Yeah.
I'm right there with you. No, I mean, I'm right there with you. I'm not, and it's not just, you know, high on the last game. You look at the schedule and you look at how it's all set up. Yeah, they could absolutely win 5 or 6 games for sure. All right. Next up, Dwayne the Diehard.
What's going on? The man, the myth, the legend.
What's up,
James,
man?
The Skermit.
Yeah, the best.
Back at it again with another great video on last, I think it was after further review. But I think, yeah. Anyway, this has been my main thing this entire season, even during the draft. Give Tyler Shuck a chance to even exist in the NFL.
Yeah.
He's a 26-year-old rookie. Hell, Kurt Warner was what, 27? I know two entirely different quarterbacks, and in no way am I comparing him to Kurt Warner. But come on, guys. Like, really? A rookie is a rookie. And an NFL team is an NFL team, albeit whether it be the Green Bay Packers, the Philadelphia Eagles, or the Carolina Panthers. Still an NFL team, right?
True.
Went out there. He performed. Did what he had to do. Like I said, I think AFV said, well, no way am I saying that he's a future Hall of Famer or that he's the future starter of the New Orleans Saints. Well, yeah, duh. If you know football, if you're an actual realist and you know what you're talking about, we didn't even know what we had in Drew Brees when Drew Brees and Sean Payton came in.
Yeah.
I.e. the three, four, eight, nine seasons before we had a Super Bowl run, right? Okay. So if we didn't know what we had in Drew Brees before we went and got him from the Chargers, we don't know what we have in Tyler Shuck. He's showing us glimpses of what he can potentially be, but it's up to him, Kellen Moore, the offense, the pieces that he has around him to really put him in that position and put him into that role where he can actually be who he's supposed to be. You see what I'm saying?
I agree.
Quarterback that has been drafted this past draft that is actually playing in the NFL, forget the Shedeur Sanders, forget the Will Howards and all the people that aren't starting right now.
Yeah.
We're talking about NFL rookie quarterbacks that are starting. Cam Ward was unproven before the season. He doesn't have an offense, but he doesn't get that excuse. Well, he gets the excuse of, oh, well, he doesn't have offense around him. Tyler Shuck was really drafted into a dumpster fire, and everybody's looking at these low-light clips of him during the draft or, you know, oh, he's played for this many college football teams. The dude's obviously good enough to get drafted. And just like everybody else who makes a negative comment about him and everything, we're all sitting on the same couch every Sunday watching the game. We're not playing. So all I'm saying is let Kellen Moore build this foundation, being Kelvin Bates, Tyler Shuck, Danny Stutzman, Jonas Tanker, Quincy Riley, all these pieces that are being implemented as the foundation, and let's go put some beams up in this next draft, man.
Yeah, I mean, and that's kind of like, and that's kind of a hard pill to swallow, but we won't know. Like, that's the thing with evaluating players. Like, we will not know at the end of this year what the future holds for Tyler Shuck. We won't know at the end of next year. You got to just kind of take it year by year, month by month, game by game, whatever, and answer the questions as they arrive. Right now, the question with Tyler Shuck is, is he good enough to where the Saints don't have to draft a quarterback in the first round? That is it. We don't have to find out, is he a future Hall of Famer? We don't have to find out, is he the next Drew Brees? We don't have to find out, will he sign a contract in for, like, we don't have to find any of that stuff out. It's just, is he good enough to where the Saints don't have to draft a quarterback? That is it. That's all we got to do right now.
Y'all want Tyler Strug to come in here and be the king size bed in the house that ain't even built yet. Come on, man. Let's just let Kellen Moore contract and sculpt and build this house. And we're gonna see, you know, we're gonna see the fruits of his labor soon. Yeah. I'm telling you. But it takes time. Let Tyler Strug actually exist in the NFL. But yeah, man, James, it's been a pleasure, man. Just tell me what you think about the development of Tyler Strug and how Kellen Moore is really slowly but surely putting this thing together.
100%. I couldn't agree more. I mean, you rushing the decisions is how you get to giving Jordan Love $200-something million. That's how you get to giving Trevor Lawrence $300 million. That's how you get to paying Tua. That's how you get to paying these quarterbacks. Is because you're so desperate to make the decision. You're so desperate to be able to say we've got our franchise guy that you're willing to overspend. Tyler Shuck's played two games. Okay. Would you rather have Tyler Shuck for the next 4 years? Or would you rather have Jordan Love with a $200-whatever million contract? Give me the Tyler Shuck option, because if it doesn't work out, whatever, I can move off of. It's not that big of a deal. But I haven't seen enough in Jordan Love to absorb that contract. I don't want that. That's way riskier. So it's so much better now to just sit, wait, see, not make a decision, just evaluate, and that's where we're at for this year. And certainly for next year as well. All right, the last call, Rufflem.
Yo, James.
What's up, man?
What's up? I hope you're having a good day. We won. We beat the Carolina Panthers.
Yes.
And this isn't the Carolina Panthers. A lot of people, in my opinion, are very like defensive about this win because they're saying, oh, it's against the Carolina Panthers.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of wild.
Well, this isn't the Carolina Panthers from last year. This is an above 500 team that people speculated could get to the playoffs,
yeah,
which now is a dead thing right now because we beat them, of course. But we did what we needed to do. And James, you made the right call saying to bet against the Panthers.
Yep.
Because if we stop Rico Dowdle, which we did, we would end up, we'd probably win the game because Bryce Young can't throw, which
that's exactly what happened.
Proven correct by your analytics, which is why you're the GOAT.
No doubt.
For the game itself, Tyler Shuck, I think, in my opinion, if he continues to play something close to how he performed against Carolina, then he could be the franchise. I'm not saying he is, but I really liked what Tyler Shuck did out there.
Yeah, the hell of a game. Hell of a game.
This wrong, but we'll see in this next upcoming games against like the easy teams like the Falcons and the Dolphins and the Jets. As for our actual performance, sure, it's 17 points, but we scored a lot of yards, you know. Here's a problem that I have.
Okay. Though,
and it's with the run game. And I know the run game did pretty well, but, like, here's the thing I have. I feel like Kellen Moore is not using Kamara the right way. And I know he had a lot of yards this game. I'm not taking away from that. But I remember when, like, Kamara – he was mostly getting those good amount of yards when he was running outside for like half his carries. I don't know how much, but like he would, when Kellen Moore wasn't there, we would run Kamara outside, inside. We would basically be doing, which one are we going to do? Are we going to do it inside or outside? Kellen Moore, for the most part, has been just putting Alvin Kamara on the inside. And I feel like Kamara is not usually the best at that. Now, I'm not saying just him running outside is going to save his like career. Maybe he won't be washed anymore. But like, I feel like we should run him outside a bit because I remember when he was in his prime or was in his prime, he would run outside for the most part. And he would be mostly successful in those areas. So I don't know what's going on there. You know, I've seen that from a comment saying, hey, we don't really use Kamara the right way. But yeah, it's kind of like my thoughts on the run game and stuff. Defensively,
so as far as the run game, I mean, there is like, you know, Kellen is going to run Let me see if I can pull it up. All right, I couldn't find it, but I think it's Sam Hoppin, but there's someone who does a chart of the percentage of runs that are inside zone, outside zone, whatever. So some of that might line up, and I'll try and find it. I posted it on my Twitter if I do find it. But, you know, some of it is like a coach is going to do what he's going to do. And yeah, it's up to the coach to put the players in the positions where they most succeed for sure. But you also have to factor in, you know, the offensive line or just the flow of the offense or whatever they want to do. So that's something worth digging into is what percentage of types of runs Kellen wants to do and things like that.
He played well. I like what Alante Taylor did. And in my opinion, I think Alante Taylor, and it might sound crazy to some of y'all, but I don't think he's a cornerback. I don't think he doesn't. I don't think he really fits cornerback.
He's not a cornerback in the traditional sense of like, you know, covering wide receivers. He is a havoc player. He's like a he's somewhere in between a linebacker, a safety, and a cornerback. He is absolutely at his best when he is blitzing, barreling down into the line of scrimmage, stopping the run, getting after the quarterback, things like that. But if he's just covering on the outside, not great.
I'm not gonna lie, I think he's more of a safety. Like, he is best at safety. Look how he rushes against a quarterback.
But that's the thing, he's only best at safety if he's blitzing. If he's just dropping back into deep coverage, like deep zone, then you're wasting his ability. So he's a very unique player defensively.
Quarterback, like him staying in the zone and the interception, you know, but like he doesn't play like a cornerback. I think he's best as a safety. You've seen him lined up against Davante Adams and he got smoked.
Yeah,
like. I don't see him as like a cornerback, which is why we need to draft a quarterback next year or sign one. But I feel like Alante Taylor doesn't fit that cornerback role. And Cooley McKinstry is bad at times, but is also good. He played good for the most part in this game. But again, like against like.
He's very similar too. If he's stuck on man on the outside against like a big physical receiver, he's more than likely getting cooked.
Earlier in the season, he was really bad, so like, yeah. I don't know what's going on there. But positive end, we won the game. That's what matters.
True.
Okay. There's not much really else I gotta say because like I'm very happy about this win. That Rashid Shaheed, me ranting and being sad about Rashid Shaheed leaving, that can go out the window. I don't care anymore. I'm already moved on from him. I'll
just
keep
like
the jersey
that.
Though. That's my only Saints jersey. But yeah, I'm One already moved ya. On from that after this win because this win hyped me up. We can win a
my
lot
how
more
how the
games
turntables
now
have,
that
have
we know
turned.
That we can win at Carolina. You know, the Falcons aren't that much better. Maybe we can get a win there and go from there. You know, I'm very happy about that. But yeah, I might send another voice message because like I have more. I want to have more stuff to talk about. So yeah, I'll see you later, man. The next voice message. Who that?
All right, there you go, ladies and gentlemen. And if you want to send a voice message, go to speakpipe.com. Link is always in the description. Super easy to do on your phone or the computer. All right, that's all the calls. We are caught up. Thank you to everybody who got involved there. I will see you in the next video, ladies and gentlemen.